Welcome back, sir. Nice to see you. Very beginning of the Sedra, Vaydaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Heishivet Chamati Me'al B'nei Yisrael, B'kano et Kinati B'tocham, V'lo Chiliti et B'nei Yisrael B'kinati. So Pinchas ben Aaron, ben Elazar ben Aaron, the Kohen, he restrained my wrath from B'nei Yisrael when I was exacting vengeance, and I didn't eradicate B'nai Yisrael with my vengeance. Lachein emor hinenu notein lo et briti shalom. Therefore, say that I'm giving him my covenant of peace. So the opening to Parashat Pinchas, it's interesting why this is the opening to the Sedra, because the first few Pesukim are really very much the conclusion of what happened in last week's Sedra. Last week's Sedra, the very end, Pinchas... Pinchas kills the couple who are being intimate together, and the plague stops. And then we see Pinchas getting his reward at the beginning of this Sedra. So I don't know why sort of there's this split between the Sidrot and it doesn't just finish off with last week's Sedra. That I don't know. But in any event, this is a conclusion to last week's Sedra. Now, one of the things that's often puzzled me a bit, and we're going to see this is something which puzzled the classical Mefarshim and others as well, is Pinchas carried out an act of great violence, really. There was a fornicating couple, and he took his spear and he stabbed them through with it. That's so he was did a very violent action. It was clearly divinely accepted. That's there's a lot of discussion in Chazal as to the notion of kana'in pogim bo, under what circumstances can a person take the law into their own hands when they see an avera being done, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, you know, it wasn't something gentle that he did. He didn't go into a corner and start saying tehillim. He took the law into his own hands and he was massively violent. So it's interesting that what's his reward for being violent? He's rewarded with shalom, briti shalom. So that seems a little bit paradoxical. So let's see how the... I'm not the first one to ask that question. Let's see how the Mefarshim address it. Et briti shalom, Rashi says, shetahe lo livrit shalom, it'll be a covenant of peace for him, ka'adam ha-machazik ha-na'ot v'tova, l'misha osei mo tova, like a person is indebted, got a debt of gratitude to somebody who does something good to him, afkan pirei shlo ha-kadosh baruch hu shlom otav. So here also, ha-kadosh baruch hu briti shalom, it's really that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extending that cordial greetings almost to Pinchas. It's, you know, saying that it's nothing to do with particularly shalom. It's not promising him a life of peace, but rather it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu extending a greeting to him. That's, was it worth it? No, you're going to be on tenterhooks for the...
money, you weren't coming.
That's tenterhooks for the rest of the... listen, a deal was a deal. A deal was a deal. That's we'll take a break for the penalties later. Okay, that's Rashi addressing the question. That's Rashi addressing the question of et briti shalom. So it's not really, you know, Rashi's saying that paradox that I presented doesn't really exist. It's not that there's a covenant of peace as opposed to war. It's simply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is establishing a cordial relationship, or a warm and cordial relationship between the two. The Ralbag, Gesonides, says it a little bit differently, though. Et briti shalom, rotzeh lomar, shekemo shesam shalom bein Yisrael uvein Hashem yitaleh. So the Ralbag is focusing not on the act of violence that Pinchas was involved in, but focusing on the result of that act of violence, which was that the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu against Am Yisrael abated, and therefore there was peace between the Jewish people and their Father in heaven. Kein yeh lo berit shalom. Therefore, Pinchas would get a covenant of peace as a reward. So again, the Ralbag is kind of addressing my question. He's saying it's not a paradox that war is rewarded with peace, but rather peace is rewarded with peace. He's focusing on a different aspect of what Pinchas did. You could look at it two ways. You could either say Pinchas was violent, or you could say Pinchas quelled HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. And that's the way the Ralbag is looking at it. Pinchas quelled HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, and therefore he was rewarded with peace for bringing peace to the Jewish people.
Tom. He saved a lot of lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Though a lot were lost as well.
Yeah. But he saved a lot.
Yeah.
So the thing that puzzles me, is there precedent before this in Tanakh or in Tanakh somewhere else where this concept of a Brit Shalom exists? Because what disturbs me is there isn't, at least from the sources you brought, there isn't actually anybody who actually says what a Brit Shalom is.
Well, no, this is what they're addressing. I mean, Rashi said the Brit Shalom is a cordial relationship, and the Ralbag is saying that it is a peaceful life. That's, I mean, we've got the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishing a Brit with people. You know, repeatedly we have that. That here we've got a, you know, British Shalom. And this is exactly what the Ralbag is saying. That just as Pinchas created a situation of peace between the Jewish people and Hashem, so likewise he would be blessed with peace. He would be, you know, the rest of his life would be peaceful. That's... He wouldn't face danger or war or battle.
But I guess that's my challenge, is the terms of it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like saying to somebody, to me, the problem of keep saying that he gets a Brit Shalom, he's like, okay, what's a Brit Shalom? It's a Brit Shalom. And there's no point in time where they actually explain it, whereas where there's another Brit, let's say there's the Brit Ben Avtarim, there is a clear explanation of what that Brit actually means for them in the future.
I hear what you're saying.
Whereas
but
here, not one of the commentators actually explains.
Well, we've only seen two, and we're going to see more. So I don't think you can say from a random sample of two. That's, but I think I think Rashi has said that what the Brit Shalom is, it is. Kampi Rishlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shlomotav. It's the cordial relationship. And I think the Ralbag, it's self-evident what a Brit Shalom. In terms of it just being a Brit, it's a Brit Shalom, a Brit of peace. We know what peace is. Peace is the absence of war and the security of peace. That's, let's look at Rav Yosef Bechonshaw. That's another one of the Rishonim. Ve'im yisna'u oto, ein b'kach klum. So he says, well, you know, Pinchas was violent, and he was violent to very important people. He was violent to a prince of Israel and the daughter of a prince of Midian. That's, so, you know, he was really sticking his neck out. But even if they are angry with him and they hate him for it, he doesn't need to worry. Ki hinani notein lo et briti shalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give him a covenant of peace. Meaning, ein lo lira klum. He's got nothing to worry about. He's promised with peace. Lo mikrove zimri shahaya nasi, v'lo mikrove kosbi shahaya bat melech. Doesn't need to worry about the relatives of Zimri, even though he was a prince. Doesn't need to worry about the relatives of Kosbi, even though she was a princess. That's a Brit Shalom. It's a protection. The absence of war. He might have been worried that he was a marked man. And what we're seeing is that he wasn't a marked man. So it was protection. So we've got, I think, three different, you know, in the Rishonim here, we've got three different approaches. Rashi, who's saying that it's the Brit Shalom is really a low-level type of peace, meaning just a warm relationship between Pinchas and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ralbag saying that it is proper peace, midah keneged midah, as it were, corresponding to what he achieved. And the Rav Yosef Bechonshaw saying that the Brit of Shalom is a promise that he's going to be safe because he was in a vulnerable position. Let's see how Rav Munk deals with it. Rav Munk's quoting Rav Hirsch, but he's made it a bit more concise. So behold, I give him my covenant of peace. From this episode, Rav Hirsch teaches the concept of peace from the Torah's perspective. Aaron's grandson, he explains, is seen here as the true defender of peace between Hashem and man. This is despite the fact that his intervention caused blood to be shed. For peace with Hashem cannot be built on compromises or retreats. A policy of peace at any price is always a surrender to evildoers. A responsible leader must confront and firmly overcome obstacles to peace. He deliberately accepts the need to be considered troublesome or intolerant when that becomes necessary to re-establish justice or safeguard Hashem's laws. So again, I think Rav Munk and Rav Hirsch are very clearly addressing my question. And what Rav Hirsch is saying is, in Achinami, yes, you know, there is a paradox here. Pinchas was violent and shed blood, but therefore I would have thought that peace is an incongruous reward for that. But in actual fact, sometimes to achieve peace, you do have to shed blood. You never have peace at any cost.
We had it under Obama, didn't we?
So well, I didn't want to get too much involved in politics,
exactly,
but as you read through it, of course, political undertones and overtones and highlights and lowlights start occurring. This idea recurs in the Midrash when it identifies Pinchas with the prophet Elijah, who will announce the coming of the Messiah. Elijah, too, will not be able to build a new world on an uncertain and equivocal basis. It is this same Elijah who keeps watch over the birth of every Jewish baby, in whom he hopes one day to find the worthy heir, the successor who will continue the struggle for the sacred cause. So I think it's quite forthright and brave, a little bit chudash maybe, what Rav Hirsch and Rav Munk are saying. They're saying that sometimes that you've got to fight for peace. Sometimes that the route to peace is through, I don't want to say through bloodshed, even though that's what they say, but achieving peace isn't always about simply laying down your weapons and letting yourself be trampled on. I want to finish this question with the comments of the Netziv. The Netziv is again bothered by the paradox that I've raised, and he addresses it in a different way, but it's very clear that he's answering this question. So what's this Brit Shalom? Bischar sheheniach ka'aso v'chamato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a reward for quelling the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, berecho b'midat HaShalom. Hashem blessed him with an attribute of peace. Now, thus far, it would seem to be exactly like the Ralbag is saying. Ralbag said, he didn't use the term midak and neged midah, but I'm using that term. The Ralbag said that Pinchas created peace, focusing on that dimension of it, so he's being rewarded with peace. The Netziv says it differently, though. He goes on to say, why was he blessed with the midah of shalom? Shelo yakpid v'lo yargiz. Meaning that, so he was blessed, like I promised him, you're not going to become an angry person. Even though on that occasion your blood boiled, that's not going to define who you are, and that's not going to dictate the rest of your life. Uvishvil ki teva hamase shasa Pinchas laharog nefesh biyado, because the nature of what Pinchas did, killing somebody with the spear that was in his hand, Haya notein lahashir b'leiv haregesh as gamacharkach. It was liable to turn him into a violent person in the future. Aval basher haya l'shem shamayim, but seeing as what he was doing was l'shem shamayim, mishum hachi ba'ah habracha, sheyehei tamid b'nachat v'midat hashalom. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a bracha, saying, you're still going to be a nice person. You're still going to be a gentle person. This shouldn't distress him. I suppose you can think about a person who's had to, be very aggressive, very violent in this way, take the law into his hands. That's going to define the type of person who he is, and you know, perhaps influence him in the future. Akash Baruch Hu is saying to him, don't worry about what you did there as a one-off. That's not going to turn you into being a brutal person. You're still going to be the gentle person that you were previously. So it's interesting to see there are a number of Mefarshim who address that opening question. It is a busy Sedra. We have a census, another census, and Rashi brings two, you haven't got it in front of you, but Rashi brings two explanations as to why there was this final census in the Midbar. Either it was because there'd just been a lot of Israelites lost their life, so it's wanted to conduct a census and see how many had fallen, how many were left, or that just as Moshe Rabbeinu received Bnei Israel and knew how many they were, so now he was coming to the end of his life. He was about to return them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so just doing that head count again before, as it were, before they get onto that proverbial coach at the end to go on the final part of the final part of the journey. And then we find that we've got the episode of the Benot Slofchad, that's who are eager and desperate to have a portion in the land. And then we find that Moshe Rabbeinu, his life is now about to draw to a close. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, Ale el har ha'avarim hazeh, go up onto Mount Avarim, or this mountain of Avarim. And we're going to see one of the questions is, why was it so called? It was called Har Nevo'ah later on. So why here is it called Har Ha'avarim? Urei et ha'aretz asher natati livnei Yisrael, and see the land which I've given to Bnei Yisrael. So we're going to, in a few moments' time, examine in some detail the appointment of Moshe's successor. But before we do that, I want to look at this passage and look at what the Kli Yakar says. The Kli Yakar asks a number of important questions. Alei el har ha'avarim hazeh. So he says to him, go up onto har ha'avarim. Tzarich iyun, we need to consider lama nismacha parsha zunakan. Question number one is, why straight after the episode of Benot Slofchad do we have to deal with this issue? Number two, v'lama kara lahar nevo har ha'avarim. Why is har nevo here called har ha'avarim? And number three, Ukshama Moshe, looking at the next passage, where Moshe says, Yivkod Elokei Aruchot Ish al Eida, he asks Hashem to appoint somebody over the Eida. Lama lo bikish yanchil sararato levanav. Why doesn't he say, I'd like you to appoint my children as my successors? Now we'll see in actual fact that Rashi, based on Midrashic tradition, tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu did suggest that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, no. But that's not what we've got at the moment. At the moment, that it seems like he didn't suggest it. The pshat of the psukim is that he didn't suggest it. And why didn't he suggest it? So the cynical answer would be, of course, that now everybody tells their children, don't do what I did for a living. That's, I tell my kids... that shows maybe that he wasn't a Hasidic Rebbe, maybe he was a good litvak. That's, I tell my kids, don't even think about becoming a rabbi. That's, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, had the same in mind for his children. That's, he didn't want them to have the same tzoros and agbas nefesh that he'd had. Anyhow, let's see what the Kli Yakar offers as an answer. V'hakarov elai lomar bazeh. It would seem to me as follows. Previously it said, Vahavar temet nachalato levito, a few psukim beforehand, where it's talking about the transfer of property. So usually the property goes through the male line, but in this case there's no male descendants. So you transfer the property to the daughter, and Perish Rashi explained, Shelekach nema vahavartem. This is why it uses the term Vahavartem, you shall transfer. It doesn't just mean that you shall transfer. Lamedcha teaches you, Shekol mi she'eno meniach ben yorsho, anybody who doesn't have a son who's going to inherit from him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu malei alav evra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry at them. Now you don't need to panic. There's at least one person in the room who's only got daughters rather than sons. But it's Kli Yakan's going to tell us not to be worried by that comment of Rashi. It doesn't mean that it's so terrible to have a daughter. The Yesh Ledak Deik, that we need to look carefully, he says, at what Rashi says. Liyor Sholamali, why does Rashi say a person who doesn't leave a ben liyor sho, a son to be his heir? Hayalo lameima, call me Shein or Meniach Ben. It could just say anybody who doesn't have a child. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, you know, angry with him. Or a son. Anybody who doesn't have a son, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's angry. Ela sheretzono loma, what it really means, afa pishe Meniach Ben. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's angry at a person who has a son. Aval eino, and it could be a daughter, equally. Aval eino ra'ui le yorsho. But they're not suitable heirs. They don't have the attributes to inherit their father's position in terms of teaching Torah, in terms of giving wise counsel, in terms of leadership and authority. They've got a child, but the child's not really interested in following on in their footsteps. As in that circumstance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu male evra alav. In that case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry with him. Because of the fact that he didn't bring up his child in such a way that they would fill his shoes after he's gone. Now, where does Rashi get that from? What makes Rashi say this? Ki mitzlofchad lekele meilaf. We can't learn that out from Slofchad. Sharei lo hayulo banim klal. Slofchad had no sons. Ela shesamach al smicha parshat aleil ha'avarim hazeh. Rashi, the Kli Yakar is suggesting, was looking ahead to the next parsha, where it says, go up onto har ha'avarim. Shelekach kara HaKadosh Baruch Hu shmo har ha'avarim. This is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu called it har ha'avarim. Ki alav nitmalei Hashem evra al Moshe. This is where Hashem was angry at Moshe. Why was Hashem angry at Moshe? That's because he hadn't brought up his children in a way that they would be suitable heirs. Sraraton v'ato atulia b'hachanat koach ha-mekabel. That's they couldn't, that they weren't suitable to be able to inherit his leadership qualities. And because of this, Moshe realized that his position wasn't going to be passed on to his children. The chen pirish Moshe hadavar she'amar. This is exactly what Moshe said in Parashat Devarim. Vayitaber Hashem b'ilamanchem. Hashem got angry with me because of you. V'samekle v'tzavet Yehoshua and told me to charge Yehoshua. Horeb be'etz pashe zeu ha'evra she'nitaber Hashem bo. This is the way in which Hashem got angry with him to do with his successor. She'yanchil sraratol Yehoshua v'lo levanav. And because he was angry, that's why his position was passed to Yehoshua and not to his children. And because he realized that his children weren't suitable, he immediately said, he didn't bother asking for his children to inherit his position, because he realized that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't happy with that idea. So, what the Kli Yakar has done, he asked three questions. His first question was, what's this got to do with the previous parasha? Well, it's got to do with the previous parasha, and it's to do with successors. That's Slofchad's successor was his daughters, Moshe's successor was Yehoshua. Why is it called Har Ha'avarim? Because it's the mountain where Hashem demonstrated his anger with Moshe Rabbeinu. And why did Moshe Rabbeinu not ask for his children to inherit his position? Because he realized that they weren't suitable for it. Of course, it's, you know, one of those you know, interesting discussions. I have a feeling that we might have touched on it in a previous year. That's, you know, the question, you know, why were Moshe Rabbeinu's, you know, children not suitable to inherit his mantle? That's, it's a very sobering parasha for anybody who's a community rabbi. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was presumably, you know, spending too much time with other people and not enough time with his own family. So his children, either, you know, they saw that, you know, is this what we want to, you know, want to become, or just, you know, he didn't invest in them in the way that perhaps he could have done. But a sobering, sobering thought, as well as the, you know, the question, like, you know, should a, you know, a parent always want their children to follow in their footsteps? I guess the answer is, in terms of avodat Hashem, the answer is yes. In terms of, you know, whether you support Liverpool or Arsenal, that's I'm not sure that it really matters. Or actually, I'm sure that it doesn't matter. That's but even, you know, in terms of avodat Hashem, you know, I would, you know, be so bold as to suggest there are, you know, lots of roads to avodat Hashem. You know, that's you know, being a rabbi is not the only way of serving Hashem. That's faithfully and in the way that we like to believe that he wants. So let's look in some depth at the appointment of Moshe appointment of Yehoshua as Moshe's successor, because I think this is a very poignant passage with lots to think about. We're going to essentially go through the Rashis, but we'll look at a few other ideas as well. So let's start with Pasuk Tet. Vavaydaber Moshe el Adonai le'mor. Moshe spoke to Hashem, saying, and some of the Mefarshim point out what's unusual about this Pasuk. What's unusual is that it's the other way around than we usually find it. Usually we find our Pesukim, Vaydabar Hashem el Moshe le'mor. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of 40 years, he's initiating the conversation. And that is something which is unusual. Yifkod Adonai Elohei HaRuchot L'chol Basar, Hashem, who is the God of spirits of all flesh, should appoint Ish Al Ha'ida, a man over the congregation. Now let's look at the let's look at Rashi. So you've called Hashem. Kevan Sheshama Moshe Sha'ama Lo Hamakom. Moshe just heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him, Tein Nachalat Tzlofchad Livnotav. Give the portion of Tzlofchad to his daughters. Amar, so Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, Oh, Higia Sha'a She'et Bat Tzolkai. It's time for me to ask for what I want. Sheyerushu banai gedulati. I also want my children to inherit my position. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, No. Lo kach al taba makshav alafanai. I hate to tell you, but this isn't actually what I had in mind. Kedai hu Yehoshua litol sachar shimusho. Yehoshua is worthy of being rewarded for his attentions. Shelo matsh mitoch ha'ohel. He never left your tent. The one who creates the fruit, the tree, that's the date palm will eat the fruit. That's meaning that Yehoshua has sowed his seeds for all these years, and now it's time for him to harvest what he's sown. Now, why in this instance is HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Elokei HaRuchot, the God of spirits? I didn't check through a concordance to see if it that term appears elsewhere, but Roland as Balkria, do you recall anywhere else Hashem described as Elokei HaRuchot?
Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah, but is it from here? You're right. It does appear in Korach. It does appear in Korach. But it's certainly an unusual term. That's yes, I saw that. Yes, okay, but it's an unusual term, you know, to use. It does appear there in Parashat Korach. Lama nema. So Rashi says, why is it used at least in this context? Amar lefanav. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Ribono shel olam galu v'yadu alefanecha. It's clear to you, da'ato shel kol echad ve'echad. Everybody's thoughts. Ve'ein domin zelazeh. And everybody is different. Manai alehem manhig, appoint for them a leader, sheyehe sovel kol echad lefidato, who can deal with everybody in the way that they need. That's, you need somebody who's got flexibility, who's able to understand different needs of different people. So I have to say, I hope, you know, tonight's year won't become too personal for me, you know, but, you know, one of the big challenges of, you know, of Rabbonus is, you know, you have a membership of however many people. That's, you know, they say two Jews, three opinions. That's, even if it's only two Jews and two opinions. But, you know, everybody wants, you know, something different, different from you. That, I remember in one of my previous shuls, they wanted to do some sort of, survey about the shul and the facilities and the provisions and everything. And they wanted to have a question about, issues to do with the rabbi. And I said to them, listen, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, insecure, but, you know, you can have 100 people, each of whom will say, you know, I'm really good, the rabbi's really good, except for one thing. Right, and what you'll end up with 100 complaints about the rabbi. That's everybody. You know, there'll be 100 different complaints. Everybody's got, you know, and you'll just end up saying, oh, you know, look, we've got 100 complaints about the rabbi. That's because everybody's got, you know, approaching something from a different perspective. That is the challenge of certainly of Jewish leadership. I mean, I suspect that in business and your own professions, you perhaps see it, as well to some degree. But I suspect not quite to the same degree as you do in communal life. So this is what he's saying: Elokei Aruchot, got to appoint somebody who's tolerant, who's flexible, who understands different types of people, different types of needs. That's what you're looking for. Let's look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ashe Yitzei Lifnehem V'Ashe Yavo Lifnehem. Somebody who will go out ahead of them and come back ahead of them. V'Ashe Yotzeim V'Ashe Yivyeim, who will lead them out and bring V'lo Tiyah Adath Adonai, so that the congregation of Hashem should not be Katzon Asher Ein Lahem Roeh, like a flock without a shepherd. Interesting metaphor there. That's a flock without a shepherd. The shepherd does a number of things. That's not only does he lead the people, the sheep, but he also protects them. That's and that's a dual role of a leader as well, not just to lead them, but also to protect them. Look at Rashi, because Rashi's going to pick up on the fact there's a repetition in that pasuk. It says, Asher yetzei lifnehem, v'asher yavo lifnehem, and then it says, Asher yotzeim v'asher yivim. He'll lead them out and bring them back, and take them out and bring them back. Why the repetition? The first point is, not like other kings who stay at home in their palaces and send their forces out to battle, but to do be like I was when we fought against Sichon and Og. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Al tira oto, that's don't fear them, I'm leading. When Yoshua was confronted by the Malach, he went and he said, you know, what can we do for you? That who do you belong to? He led the way. So that's Asher Yitzei Lifnehem, Asher Yavo Lifnehem. Okay, to go at the head of the column, not to hide behind everybody else. Asher yotzi'eim v'asher yivi'eim bizchuyotav, with his merits. So therefore, to have a spiritual leadership as well, not just in terms of setting an example, but to be a person of such religious and spiritual stature that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look after the people who are his charges as a result of the zechut, as a result of the merit of the leader. Davar Acher, or another way of interpreting it, Asher Yivi'eim, who should be able to bring them in, Shelo Ta'aseh Lo Kederech She'ata Oseh Li, She'eini Machnisan La'aretz. Very interesting comment, Rashi saying, you know, there's a bit of bitterness in Moshe Rabbeinu's tone. That's Asher Yivi'eim, you know, this, whoever, you know, takes over from me, I hope you're not going to do the same to him as you did to me. You know, I looked after them for 40 years, and, you know, it's like, you know, I scored 3 goals, that's, and then when it comes to extra time, you take me off. And don't let me play in that last half hour. Don't be like that with me. So Pasuk Yudchet. Vayomer Hashem on Moshe. So Hashem said to Moshe, Kach l'chait Yehoshua ben Nun, take Yehoshua ben Nun, ish asher ruach bo, a person who has this ruach that we've referred to previously, so a person who can understand different people, v'samachta et yadacha alav, and place your hand on him. Rashi says, Kach lecha, kachenu bidvarim. Take him by saying the right things to him. The commentaries on Rashi point out that it has to mean that, because when it says kach lecha, it doesn't mean pick him up, you know, by the scruff of his neck and carry him. So, you know, it doesn't mean to take a person. Take a person, you know, entice him. That's encourage him, say the right things. Ashrecha shezachita lahanhig banav shel makom. What are you supposed to say to him? Ashrecha shezachita lahanhig banav shel makom. You're happy, you're lucky that you've got this role to lead Hashem's people. So I went last week and a half ago, there was a lecture for a seminar for shul rabbis and their lay leaders. That's my lay leaders weren't able to make it, but I went. That's by Professor Erica Brown, who's a Jewish Torah scholar and teacher from the USA. It was on leadership. So one of the things that she was talking about was, you know, how do you encourage people, you know, to become your chairman? How do you encourage people to come onto your board of management? That's, so you can, you know, approach them two ways. And, you know, I think this is one of the areas where maybe I've made mistakes in the past. You know, as I said, getting very personal tonight. You know, you can go up to people and say, listen, you know, we're desperate. We really need you. If you don't come on, the whole place is going to go to pots. It's going to be a disaster if we need you. That's, or you can sell it as, this is such an amazing opportunity for you. This is so exciting. This is the opportunity you've been looking for all your life. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go up to Yehoshua and say, bad news, Yehoshua. It's, you know, my kids have been ruled out. They're not up to it. There's nobody else who knows. You know, you know the ropes. I know I've had a nightmare of the past 40 years, but you know, I'll give you some advice. It's not like that at all. Ashrecha shezachita lahanig banav shel makom. This is amazing. This is such a tremendous opportunity for you. So Moshe Rabbeinu only said to him the positive things, not the negative things. Yoshua knew the negative things. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to pass it over, he said the positive things. So kach lecha, lecha et shebaduk lecha, somebody you know well. You know him. Asher ruach bo, kasher sha'alta, just like you asked. She'achol lahaloch neged ruchos shel kol echad ve'echad. That he can go, interesting lashon here, lahaloch neged rucho. Keneged rucho, I think, means he can go against the spirit of everybody. It's only got, you know, 600,000 people, each telling you to do different things. you can forge your own path. That's the samachta yadcha alav, should place your hand on him. Now, there's discussion in the Mefarshim what it means. Does it mean literally placing your hand on him? This is discussion also with regard to smicha. The Rambam says that smicha is essentially giving a person a title. Doesn't literally mean anybody, there's a laying on of hands. But with Moshe Rabbeinu, he says there was a laying on of hands. Well, with Yehoshua. Then when Moshe inducted Yehoshua, that's, he placed his hands on Yehoshua's head. But beyond that, it doesn't mean a literal laying on of hands. That's, what does it mean according to Rashi? Tein lo turgaman. Give him an interpreter. That's the way teaching was done in those days. The teacher would say over what he's got to say. Somebody with a loud voice would shout it out to everybody. The yidrosh b'chayecha. And then Yehoshua will give a drosha in your life. Shelo yomru, they won't say, lo hayal lo harim rosh b'chayim Moshe. He couldn't speak in front of Moshe. Moshe will sit there in the front row, listening, avidly to what the new man says. So show everybody that you've got confidence in him. Okay? And that's an important thing about passing on leadership, that you have to show everybody that you're not resentful about it, or you don't have reservations, but you're positive about it. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein in Darash Moshe has got an interesting comment there. He says, no, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to put his hands on Yahshua's head? So that Yahshua would realize, it wasn't to induct him with authority, but so that Yahshua would realize that, no, he's like got the strength of Moshe Rabbeinu pressing down on him throughout his life and making him realize that actually he is in Moshe Rabbeinu's shadow. That's Pasuk Yetet. You shall stand him in front of Elazar the Kohen, in front of all the congregation. You shall charge him before them. You shall put from your glory upon him. So that all Bnei Israel will hear. Look at Rashi on Pasuk Kaf. V'natata mehodacha. Zekirun orpanim, the brightness of his face, that Yahshua would have some of that. Mehodacha, very fascinating comment here. V'lo kol hodacha, not all of your glory. Namtzinu lemeidim, so we learn from this, Pnei Moshe kachama, Pnei Yahshua kalvana. Moshe was as bright as the sun. Yahshua was dimmer, like the moon. So why, one might wonder, why was Moshe Rabbeinu like the sun and Yahshua like the moon? Why was Yahshua not given the same glory as Moshe Rabbeinu?
Moshe had the Quran when he came off Har Sinai.
Correct. That's right. So you might well say simply because Yahshua hadn't been in Hashem's presence in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu had been. That would be one answer. Another answer would be to say that it was to show that Yahshua didn't have independent authority, but everything that he had was taken from Moshe Rabbeinu. That's in terms of the sun has its own light, the moon has reflected light. So it's to show that Yahshua was a successor to Moshe Rabbeinu and was following in his footsteps and reflecting everything. He was a faithful disciple. That would be the pshat of it. That's, however, if you turn over the page, you look in the Chatam Sofer. Look at the second comment there of the Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer says something very powerful. He quotes Rashi, he's quoting from a Gemara. V'lo kol hodacha, not all of your glory. Pnei Yehoshua kifnei levana. Yehoshua's face was like the moon rather than the sun. Leman yishmu'u eilav kolatat Yisrael. The pasuk says that leman yishmu'u kolatat Yisrael. You shall transmit some of your glory to Yahshua so that people will listen to him. Well, if you want people to listen to it, so you need some of your glory, otherwise they won't listen to you. Give it all. V'achacham Rebbe Vul Feidenheim might say kuntras kushya b'shem Rav Yosef Rabbi Shimon. To have an elema the man yiru kol Yisrael she yiru keron ol panav of lo yishmau. That it should have said that everybody will fear him. That they'll see the kiron ol. V'nire pnei Moshe hayashiv atayim ka'or hachama. Says the problem was Moshe Rabbeinu's radiance was 70 times as powerful as the light of the moon, sun. V'yaru migeshet elav. Actually, people were a bit frightened of Moshe. He was unapproachable. Rak Aaron zikenei ha'ida. It was only Aaron and the leaders who could come close to him. Al kein hiktin hakadosh baruch hu pnei Yehoshua kifnei levana'a. Therefore, Yehoshua shone less brightly than Moshe. Leman yishmu elav kol adat Yisrael, so that everybody would be able to listen to him. V'yuchlu nehistakel bo, and they'd be able to look at him. V'lo rak hazakenim, and not just the elders. So this very clever answer of the Chatam Sofer is saying that it was that there was a bit of a reassessment. This happens, you know, whenever you appoint a new leader. That you know, do we, you know, you look. Well, the last one was very good, but is there anything we want to change? So the answer is, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu was great, but there was a problem. The problem was that he didn't have a close relationship with the people. He was too, even though he was human, he was too removed from them. He was too unapproachable. So let's make Yoshua bin Nun, v'natata mehodacha alav, some of the glory of Moshe Rabbeinu, but not quite his glory. We want somebody more approachable. That's somebody once said to me, you need to be a bit more huggable. That's, I said, I'm not a huggy person. But, you know, that's what, that was what was needed there with Yehoshua.
That was the contrast with Aaron.
Yes.
That's why they
yeah, they cried for Aaron for 30. Yes, that's right. That's right. Let's just finish off with a passage there from Rav Moshe Sternbach on the expression Vashay Yotzeim, Vashay Yuvieim. So looking for a leader who will bring them in and take them out. Sorry.
So this just builds on the previous points you've had in previous weeks where you needed a leader for that generation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it's very similar sort of thing. Yeah. He has to make his own.
Yeah, yeah, like we spoke about in Parashat Chukat. Yes, definitely, definitely. Okay, so you need a leader. We'll take them out and bring them back. Seems from the text, Shebikesh Moshe Manhig Yisrael. Moshe was looking for a leader. Shelo ye kafuf l'ratzon ha'am. Somebody who wouldn't be under the thumb of the people. Chedugmat harabanim hanimitmanim kayom al yedei vad kila committee belaz, not like rabbis nowadays who are appointed by a committee. Videhem kavulot l'ratzon gabay v'askane haptibol. Their arms, their hands are tied by the gabayim and by the executive. Ad she'im be'efsharutam lahamid hadas al mechona, to the degree that they can't establish things according to halacha. She'en yicholim lachuf b'nei hakila l'datam dar toratenu hakdosha. They're powerless to force people to do the right thing. Valkena mar ka'an. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu said here, kimul vada she yitzei lifnehem v'ashe yavo lifnehem. Besides the fact that he will be a leader in the sense that he'll go out before them and come back ahead of them, showing them the right way. V'hainu b'haskamatam. That is, provided they want to follow. Should also be a person who's strong enough that even if they don't want to follow, he'll force them to follow. Even if they think that's not what they want. That was the type of leader Rav Moshe Sternbach is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for in his successor. Not just saying, you know, there's a leader who can lead when people are willing to follow. Sometimes the people aren't willing to follow. And then you need to be able to drag them and force them. It's not enough just to be a good example. You also need to be very forceful and very strong in that regard. At least that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for there. Okay, we'll leave it there for this evening. That's and.